Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football inclusive.
Hello, everybody. It is September 30th, the last day of September, as we're starting to hit conference play in college football. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, and I want to wish you to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio, brought to you by All Access Football Radio. And we have a packed show for you today. Once again, special guest Daniel Thomas, running back of the Kansas State Wildcats, a Heisman contender, a Heisman sleeper, joining us as they are every week, are Justin Van Fulpen and Kelron Sykes. We're going to talk a little Florida, Alabama, Wisconsin at Michigan State with Mr. Midwest, Justin Van Fulpen, and Kelron Sykes, our super scout, former Oregon State player. We'll talk a little bit about his Beavers playing Arizona State, as well as Georgia going to Colorado as A.J. Green is expected to make his debut. Roundtable, we're going to talk quarterback again, Ryan Mallett, Gerard Johnson, and Andrew Luck. Let's see what our boys think of that trio of quarterbacks, guys that the NFL scouts will be watching this week and throughout the season. Also with us will be making his College Football Insider debut, our super intern, Wes O'Donnell. He was on location last week watching North Carolina play, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about their defenders. And boy, I got to be honest, the way the ACC has shaken out so far, I wanted to put North Carolina as my ACC champ. I wanted to have them in the top 10, and the way things have shaken out with a close loss to LSU, who's 4-0 now, with a close loss to Georgia Tech in week two, you really got to feel like, wow, this team, this UNC team, if they had these players, boy, it would be hard to think they wouldn't be 3-0 right now, the favorite in the ACC, and a potential BCS title sleeper. It's amazing what this team may have cost itself, and we're going to have a little bit more on that on Butch Davis and his Tar Heels. We will also talk about Stanford and Oregon. Wes does our Game of the Week preview in College Football Insider's newsletter. We'll also touch a little Red River rivalry. Say that three times. I dare you. Oklahoma takes on Texas in the state fair at Texas, but it's one of those 50-50 games, neutral site games. It's about equidistant to both programs. All right, let's talk a little bit about what happened today as well before we get into a big picture with the UNC stuff. We did learn that Denoris Searcy, their hard-hitting safety, quasi-linebacker, he plays kind of like that hybrid position. They like to play him near the line of scrimmage a lot. A kid that I think has been kind of overshadowed, a solid player, a solid prospect when you talk about that program with all the other guys. Well, he's due back this Saturday, so they get another piece of that puzzle back on defense. We also learned, unfortunately, Robert Marv from Purdue tore his ACL last week in his knee. He is done for the season, so tough break there for the Boilermakers. They have a bye this week to get ready, but still a big loss for them. We thought that was a perfect landing spot for Marv, the former Miami Hurricane. Good spot for quarterbacks, as always, in that Purdue offense. Now, we also learned today in a report by Yahoo Sports that former assistant football coach John Blake has several financial transactions tying him to NFL agent Gary Wichard, involving namely Marvin Austin, as well as some of the other potential players who might have been involved. We heard from Butch Davis today, and now, Blake is not just he was the assistant head football coach. He was a defensive line coach, one of the best at his craft in the nation, also considered one of the top recruiters in the nation. So this is a big blow for the program. And we also heard today from Butch Davis. And listen, I like Butch Davis. I like what he's doing there. But with these college coaches, I'm really tired of the Sergeant Schultz, I know nothing, way of handling these scandals. We saw it from, Pete Carroll when he tried to tell us that, hey, Reggie Bush, this guy wasn't even a starter on my team the year before, as if, he wasn't one of the key players. This year, this week, we heard hear from Butch Davis saying there's 27,000 students at the University of North Carolina. Well, Butch, thanks for, informing me. I wasn't sure of the total enrollment. I'm pretty sure out of those 27,000, 26,900 are not on your football team. And we'll give you a pass if any of those kids get in trouble. We won't get on your case for that. But, you know, on top of that, not only is Marvin Austin, you know, not just any old student when it comes to Butch Davis at UNC, he's not any old football player either. He's a key football player who probably thought about, you know, leaving for the NFL draft, as did a few of these guys for the Heels, decided to return to school only to have, you know, missing the season. And you know, some of the stuff Davis says does have some validity. People do have private lives. You're not going to know what's going on. But first and foremost, if this does all tie into Blake, and that's the coach you hired, that's the coach you brought in, well, you know what? I didn't know isn't good enough as far as I'm concerned. Because if you didn't know, Butch, you should have known, okay? I don't know what's worse. I don't know if it's worse if you knew what was going on or if you didn't know what was going on. I mean, you know, these guys get paid a whole lot of money. They are the faces of these programs. Many of them are the highest paid state employees. Hey, I don't begrudge them to have any of that stuff. But then, you know, when the blank hits the fan, I don't want to hear you say, well, look, you know, leave me alone. I didn't know anything. You know, does the chemistry teacher know what's going on if his student gets in trouble? Well, guess what? The chemistry teachers don't get paid $2.5 million, $3.5 million like some of these college football coaches. So that's an apples to oranges comparison. And whether you could have known, you know, ultimately you are responsible. You're responsible. This is your program. You at these schools, or maybe North Carolina, basketball is obviously a big part of that university and athletic department. But in many of these college football schools, this football coach is the face of the athletic department, bigger than the athletic director, bigger than the school president. So, guys, please, I can't take the, hey, how am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to know? I can't be everywhere at every time. Coach, we get that. But I'm tired of the excuses from these guys. And if things do tie more so to the coach, I think that puts a greater responsibility on Butch Davis. And he can't just say, hey, well, that's what he did. I didn't know what was going on. That's your guy. That's your guy that you brought in there. And I think you need to take responsibility for that. All right, let's leave that topic for now. You know me. I always like to talk about what's going on the field, leave the outside lines to other people during our 1 hour here, but I had to get on my soapbox a little bit on the coaches here and not taking responsibility. Is that what they preach to their players, take responsibility? Well, maybe these guys need to take a little responsibility themselves and start setting an example and not just talking about it. This isn't a do as I say, not as I do. Let's be leaders by example here, men. All right, let's move on now, and we have a special guest with us. This was an interview recorded earlier in the week with Daniel Thomas, stellar running back from Kansas State.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of College Football Insider's Player Spotlight. And with me right now is running back Daniel Thomas from Kansas State. He is second in the nation with 628 yards, which is tops amongst running backs, and fourth in the country with his 157 yards per game. Kansas State is 4-0. And Daniel Thomas is with us today. Daniel, thanks for joining us. How's everything going?
It's going good. I mean, we're undefeated right now, so everything's going pretty good.
Yeah, it can't be better than 4-0, right? Daniel, let me ask you. Now, you're pretty big back, 6'2", around 230 pounds or so, give or take a couple of pounds. How would you define your running style?
I would say physical, but, you know, I have a little bit of wiggle, and I haven't really
made sense. And now, you know, people are always obsessed with the speed and everything. What's your best 40 time that you've run?
My best time here is maybe 4.58, something like that.
All right, not too bad for a big guy. How about on the field, besides your, you know, running style and running abilities, are you a talker on the field?
Not really. I mean, I let my offensive line talk for me. So they speak to my part of me. They stand up for me and they handle that for me. So.
All right. So you're more of let your running do the talking, not your mouth.
Yes, sir.
Last year, you know, you had a big season, led the Big 12 in rushing after your junior year. Did you have any thoughts of coming out after last season?
No, sir. Not at all. I mean, I wanted to come back and play another year with Coach Lanier and, you know, go to a bowl game. So that's my main focus. I didn't think about it. at all.
And you were 3 of 4 throwing the football last season. And for people who might not know, you played a lot of quarterback both in high school as well as junior college. Do you miss playing the quarterback position at all?
Really just a little bit. I don't miss, you know, dropping back and trying to, you know, throw the ball every down. But, I mean, you know, the quarterback, he's the leader of the team, and, you know, everybody look up to him. So I kind of, you know, miss that kind of part. But I like running back more than anything.
And now let me ask you this: how about when that play does come in and you know you're going to have an opportunity to throw the ball? Do you get a little excited anticipating that play coming in?
Oh yeah, I get a little excited. You know, bringing back memories. You know, me playing quarterback, but at the same time, you know, I got to stay focused and make sure you know I'm able to make the throw and not have to change the play or anything like that. So you just got to stay focused.
That time as a quarterback, how do you think that's helped you as a running back? Is there anything that playing that position that translate you think that has benefited you playing the running back position?
I think the main thing, you know, from playing quarterback is something what is maybe most of all part of the Wildcat packages, you know, because that's basically what I was, a Wildcat quarterback. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the zone reads and everything when I'm at the quarterback, so I think that's helped me out a lot.
And we're talking to Daniel Thomas, the star tailback from the Kansas State Wildcats, 4-0 coming out of the Big 12. Daniel, let me ask you, in high school, you were also a big-time safety as well. I don't know if you saw this past weekend for Stanford, they have Owen Marasek, he's a fullback and a linebacker. Could you ever picture yourself playing both ways, being an Ironman at the Division I level?
I don't know about both ways, but, you know, growing up, I figured I'd play safety or defense, you know, at the next level. So, you know, I never thought I'd play running back.
This week, Kansas State, you guys are off. So what do you plan on doing with your free time this Saturday?
I don't know if we have free time. I think we'll be practicing. So I'll be up here preparing for the draft. I'll be out here watching some things. So, no, I'm not really free time.
Are you going to try to catch any football at all that day?
No, I'm pretty sure. You know, I watch some games. Pretty sure I will, so.
And I, you know, as you mentioned, life is pretty good. You guys are 4-0. Should you guys be ranked? Does that bother you at all that you're not in the top 25?
I feel like we gotta, you know, get some big wins up there. Not saying that, you know, they have any wins, but I think, you know, a win here home at Nebraska, you know, maybe would catapult us in the top 25. I think so. We just gotta win some big games, I think.
All right, and how about that start of the season? I mean, you had a great start of the season, ran for 234 yards against UCLA, a team that just upset Texas, had a big game, 137 yards against Mississippi State, an SEC team. How big was that for you to get off to such a good start in your senior season?
You know, that's what I talked about. You know, I wanted to get off to a fast start and, you know, get our team rolling and on the winning track. So, I mean, that was very important, and that's something me and Coach talked about at the beginning of the year. He just started fast, so that was big for us, I think.
Now, you mentioned a chance, a big opportunity with Nebraska coming in. That'll be next Thursday on ESPN. You got that standalone. The whole country will be watching. What kind of atmosphere should we expect to see next Thursday in Manhattan when the top 10 Cornhuskers come to town?
I'd say it's like a Big 12, you know, championship kind of atmosphere. You know, I mean, it's going to be packed and loud, you know, just like it was last year when we played them, you know, for the North title. So I expect it to be a big game, you know. It's going to be a latch in the Big 12, so I think it's going to be pretty big.
How about for you individually as a running back? What kind of challenge is going up against that stellar defense present to you?
Yeah, that's a big challenge for me. You know, they're top 10 team. You know, they got a great defense every year. And just to be on national television, everybody watching, you know, you just got to go out there and perform at a high level. So that's what I'm going to try and do.
Let me ask you, Daniel. They're without Ndamukong Suh this year. Is there any part of you that misses the fact that he's not going to be on the field on Thursday night?
Not at all. I'm glad. I mean, he was a great player. And, I mean, I'm just glad. You know, I don't have to worry about him anymore. But they got another great defensive tackle, so, you know, I don't have to worry about him now.
That's right. That would be Jared Crick, their junior defensive tackle. So it's still strong defense in Nebraska. Daniel, I want to put you on the clock, the two-minute drill, before we let you go, okay?
Okay.
I believe you grew up a Miami Hurricanes fan. So who was your favorite all-time Hurricane growing up?
Sean Taylor.
Sean Taylor, the safety. Not surprising, being that you were a safety in high school. Now, if you couldn't play football, if you weren't a football player, what do you think you'd be trying to do with your career?
Playing basketball.
Playing basketball. Who's your favorite basketball player growing up?
My favorite, Jordan, of course.
Hey, you're talking to a New Yorker who was, you know, had his heart broken many times by MJ, so.
Yeah, you got me used to it, though. It's
all right, that's fair enough. I mean, hey, you can't go wrong with MJ. He was the best. I also hear you can cook pretty good. Do you ever cook for any of your teammates?
I did during the summer or during the winter conditions. You know, I fry a little fish and stuff like that, so.
What do they think of your cooking skills? Do they give you high grades?
Of course. I mean, you can't deny my cooking, so you just have to ask them about it.
How about your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is Varsity Blues.
Sticking with the football theme, you have a favorite actor?
Favorite actor? Will Smith.
Will Smith, a little Fresh Prince action. How about your favorite music artist?
Lil Wayne.
Now, and one more before we let you go, Daniel. Is there anything on your iPod that people will be surprised that you're listening to?
Let's see. I got some NSYNC.
I was going to ask you maybe Backstreet Boys, but I guess NSYNC is surprising as well. Daniel Thomas from Kansas State, thank you very much for joining us and giving us some time. Enjoy the weekend. No rest for the Wildcats as they get ready for Nebraska. Good luck next week, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
All right, that was Daniel Thomas from Kansas State. And I just want to remind everyone, go to NFLDraftBible.com, sign up, and become an all-access football member to get that College Football Insiders newsletter every week during the college football season. And ready to join us now is Mr. BCS Buster himself, our man Kenny Franek, who ranks the top 10 BCS Buster teams each and every week, as well as the offensive, defensive, and special teams player of the week for the newsletter. And that's a little Boise State fight song to bring Kenny on. Kenny, how are you today? How's it going?
Well, Dan, considering I either have a severe head cold or I'm getting the flu, I guess things could be better. But other than that, they're just fine and dandy. How are things on your end?
Pretty good. Kenny was questionable on the injury report, but toughed it out, came to play, even though he's injured. We love it. Kenny, let's start with Boise, the fight song. We played it there for the listeners. Let me ask you this. You know, last week they beat Oregon State. Obviously, everybody knows they opened the season against Virginia Tech and won that game. But considering that, you know, Tech and Oregon State both have losses against other clubs, have they passed their toughest hurdles yet, or is maybe the toughest game still in front of them?
I mean, I guess you could consider those their toughest hurdles, but, I mean, I don't think they're in the clear like a lot of, if you hear a lot of the college analysts talk about it, they think they have a cakewalk ahead of them, but they really don't. November 19th, they actually play host to Fresno State, which will be a tough game. I know Fresno State's your team, Dan. And the week after, they actually have to travel to Reno to play a very, very tough Nevada team, who actually just cracked the top 25, as you know. And I believe Nevada actually will be their toughest test for the remainder of the season. I mean, they beat Cal badly earlier this year, and at the time, Cal was ranked the top defense in the nation. And Colin Kaepernick is actually playing his best football of his career right now, and they also have a tremendous running game with Vai Taua. So, you know, I think if Boise is to trip up, that will be the one game that they do slip up on.
That's definitely a game to watch down the road against that pistol attack, the pistol offense that they run there out in Nevada. Kenny, big picture, where does Boise stack up in terms of the top teams when you look at an Alabama, when you look at an Ohio State? People seem to put those two teams ahead of them because Boise's number three. I still think it's going to be tough for Boise to stay ahead of, let's say, if Oklahoma or Nebraska go undefeated or if a Pac-10 team goes undefeated. I think it's going to be tough for Boise to stay ahead of either one of those teams if that happens down the road. Where do they stack against the top teams in the other conferences?
Well, the bottom line is, Dan, I mean, anytime you return 21 of 22 starters after an undefeated season, and at the end of the season, people were, you know, trying to make a case for them to even get a chance at the national championship game after the season was over. So now everyone wants to say, oh, they have a soft schedule. You know, they don't play anybody. Virginia Tech lost to James Madison, so that doesn't look good on their schedule anymore. The bottom line is, when you return that many starters and everyone was raving about you the year before, why not rave about you this year? That's what I don't get. So in my mind, they're without a doubt a top five team. You know, there's always considerations of other teams, like, as you said, Alabama, Oklahoma, even like an Oregon who's playing very well right now, and they play Stanford this week. That'll kind of determine if they can jump, you know, Boise State in the polls this week. And Ohio State also just beat, you know, a great Miami team. So, yeah, just for the fact that they do have that lack of powerhouses, especially their non-conference games, this season, you know, it is going to be hard for them to actually make a case to be in the top two, even if they do go undefeated at the end of the season. But, you know, I really do like them. You know, Kellen Moore is just an incredible quarterback, and their offense is just stacked. You know, Austin Pettis and Titus Young as his weapons as wide receivers, and not to mention their three-headed running game monster. They got DJ Harper, Doug Martin, and Jeremy Avery. I mean, anytime you have a great passing game to go along with a tremendous rushing attack, I mean, you had to be considered a threat. And their defense, you know, their only key loss was Kyle Wilson. Yes, he was the key cog on that defense last year. You know, but they have what's his name? I'm sorry, I'm lost here. But his replacement has been very well, Jarrell Gavins. He's been very well in Kyle Wilson's spot. So, I mean, their defense really hasn't missed a beat either. So, yeah, I think they should be ranked in the top five, if not the top three, where they're at right now.
All right. Kenny, we're going to debate that, I'm sure, a little bit more throughout the year as the season goes on and the picture starts sorting itself out a little more. Before we let you go, Kenny, what's a potential BCS buster game this week? Looking at the schedule, I don't see a big game for the Boise's, the TCU's, or Utah, but is there a BCS buster that could knock off a top school this week?
Well, East Carolina's at UNC. It's actually East Carolina's second of a three-game road stretch. They lost last week in Blacksburg to Virginia Tech. That was their first loss of the season, so I'm actually really interested to see how they bounce back against their second straight ACC opponent on the road. And as you know, North Carolina was a favorite to contend with Virginia Tech and Miami for the ACC title, but, you know, with the suspensions early in the season, that really hasn't panned out. So it'll be interesting to see if North Carolina can bounce back and as well as East Carolina in this game.
And there's also, I believe, a clash between two of your top 10 teams, right?
That's correct. Navy at Air Force. You know, they both run the option offense very well. Navy actually ranks ninth in the nation in rushing right now, and Air Force is the top rushing team in the nation. So that's another one that you got to watch for to see if either team can stop the either's rushing attack. You know, and if it doesn't, you know, who's going to prevail? It'll come down to defense. And I actually really like Air Force in this game. And it seems to me that when any of the armed force teams play, it's always a dandy of a game.
Oh, definitely. This game doesn't get as much attention as Army and Navy, but it's definitely one to watch. And for those of you out there who miss those Oklahoma-Nebraska games in the 80s where there would be like 10 passes in the whole game combined, check this game out. Kenny Franek, our BCS buster from College Football Insiders. Kenny, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Have a good one.
All right. And that is Kenny Franek, and we're moving on, staying in-house, and we're bringing on Mr. Justin Van Fulpen, our draft guru out of the state of Michigan. Justin, how are you doing today?
Good. How's it going, Dan?
Pretty good, Justin. You know, a lot of big games this week, a lot to talk about, and we're going to start with a big one in the SEC with Florida traveling to Alabama. to give some love to the Gator people down there in Gainesville. I know they've been getting on me because they're not in my top 10 just yet, but they'll have an opportunity to show what they could do this week when they go to Tuscaloosa. And Justin, specifically, one guy I think has something to prove. He's got decent numbers so far, and that's quarterback John Brantley, completing 64% of his passes, 6 touchdown passes to just 1 interception. He's going to be going up against an Alabama defense that got shredded in the first half, maybe grew up a little bit against Ryan Mallett and came up with 3 interceptions. How does Brantley match up against that Alabama defense?
Well, I don't think very good. You know, and Gator Nation, you know, might be a little bit disappointed this Saturday. With the defense that Alabama has, and like you said, they got shredded against Mallett in that first half, but really, you know, came back to be able to show up and make some plays. And they've got a lot of guys with NFL talent, and guys I think we'll hear, you know, early as far as in April with Marcel Darius and Mark Barron and Dante Hightower. I mean, guys really that have NFL pedigree at all levels of their defense. So I think it's going to be hard there for Florida's offense to get rolling, and obviously that's why Alabama's ranked number 1 and as far as the defending national champions.
All right, now a couple of defensive guys, 2 guys in particular. Let's leave Darius out of this just because, you know, he just finally came back and he was really banged up last week, didn't get a chance to show much of what he could do. But who do you think is the better prospect in that back 7, let's say, or back 8, which they often run a 3-4? Is Dante Hightower their linebacker or safety Mark Barron?
Well, I like Mark Barron better when we're comparing those 2 guys and we're talking about, you know, impact at the next level. You know, as far as in safety is a position that, you know, gets a lot of love now with the evolutions of, you know, Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu and Louis Delmas, and, you know, early we had this past year's draft there, Eric Berry. Now, I don't think he'll be drafted as high, but I like him. He's got great size, 6'2", 210. He can run. He can cover. He can come up and support the run. So to me, he's a very, you know, NFL-ready type safety there. You know, 6'2", 210, you know, is a tied with, you know, Hightower with, you know, tackles there with 20, you know, and really is a guy who can get to the ball and as far as with some explosiveness and some power, and also can be able to cover, you know, tight ends and backs out of the backfield.
I tend to agree with you, Justin, especially because, being honest, to me, Hightower has not looked as explosive coming off that major injury that he had that needed surgery in the offseason as he did pre-injury. So that's something to keep an eye on with Dante Hightower, particularly in pass coverage. How about head-to-head? This is a matchup you got to love as a scouting guy, as an NFL draft guy. Julio Jones against Janoris Jenkins.
Yeah, I mean, as far as those 2 guys are probably both first-round draft picks. Both the guys are, you know, true juniors who will probably declare early for the 2011 NFL draft. I mean, obviously, you know, Julio Jones is a guy we've all known since he stepped on campus down there in Alabama. And Jenkins is getting a little bit more love, you know, for his this year, his junior year. And he's a guy who's kind of rising up a lot of people's draft boards when we're talking about underclassmen, especially cornerbacks. I think as far as Julio Jones, just his physicality, his ability to run great routes, he's healthy, you know, as far as he's ready to explode, you know, as far as averaging over 15 yards per catch. And they don't throw the ball, you know, as much down there as other teams would if they had a talent like Julio Jones with the guys that Alabama has in the backfield. So I really like Julio Jones in this matchup. But as far as Jenkins, is a top-notch corner, probably right now, probably the 4th overall cornerback, at least on my board, when we're talking about, you know, next year's draft, but still a, you know, first-round talent.
Definitely an intriguing matchup of 2 guys who could go in the first round. I like Jenkins better than the kid Hayden from last year that went in the top 10 myself. Julio Jones, you're right. He looks healthy. He looks like a different player this year and definitely making big grounds, especially when he gets the ball and starts making moves in the open field. All right, Justin, before we get to the round table quickly, Wisconsin at Michigan State. Better pro, Gabe Kiremi, the left tackle from Wisconsin, or middle linebacker Greg Jones from Michigan State?
I think Kiremi will get drafted higher than Jones just because, you know, Jones is a, you know, more of an inside linebacker, middle linebacker at the next level. But I particularly like Greg Jones better, you know, just a guy to me who can, you know, make plays sideline to sideline, the guy who can rush the quarterback, drop in coverage, you know, has, you know, first-team All-American last year, this year, already got 33 tackles, a couple tackles for loss, a couple interceptions, the first 2 interceptions of his career. I really like Greg Jones. He's been, you know, all Michigan State. I think when it's all said and done, he'll be the leader and tackles there and just a playmaker. And I look for him to come up big this Saturday in East Lansing.
Yeah, big season for Greg Jones. As you said, adding a little versatility to his game, stepping up as a pass defender. He also has three forced fumbles. How about on the other side, back to Wisconsin's offense, John Clay, 501 yards, 6.5 per carry, 6 touchdowns, big back. Was the offensive player of the year last year in the Big Ten, is on to similar pace as he was last season, but you can't help but think Wisconsin, wait a second, Ron Dayne, didn't he win a Heisman there, big back P.J. Hill, another big back that put up big numbers, neither one really has had a stellar NFL career. What's your prognosis on John Clay? Is he just the next in line, or will he kind of break that bad string of Badgers coming into the NFL?
I'm hoping he's going to break that, you know, that string there. I think he's a more athletic guy than P.J. Hill or Ron Dayne was. And I think the standpoint of what we have in the NFL now is those two-headed monsters, and you're looking for a big back and more of a, you know, a scat back type, you know, level where to kind of, you know, share carries and really kind of do what they think. And I think that's where John Clay could fit in the next level, into that rotation type of running back, you know, and get some carries and get some, you know, hard yards and be that big physical back. So, you know, he thought about declaring early last year, decided to come back for his redshirt junior season there. I think he'll be a guy who declares early and goes to the NFL draft and probably more of a third, fourth round type running back, but I think he'll have a productive career in the NFL.
All right. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. I'm not so sure he will go that high. I could see him slipping around or two lower, but it's not far off. It'll be interesting to see how he does this year, and obviously if he does declare, how he tested the combine. All right, it is time for the roundtable discussion, and joining us now will be our super scout, Mr. Kelron Sykes. Always with the Oregon State fight song for Mr. Kelron, the former Beaver. Kelron, thanks for joining us. And we're going to jump right into the roundtable. I'm going to throw it to you, Kelron. Last week, we talked a lot about Ryan Mallett as a top quarterback prospect. What did you take from last week's performance? Big, big first half, almost 250 yards against a Nick Saban defense. You don't see that every day at any level. However, three interceptions, including two costly ones in the fourth quarter that probably cost them the game. What to you stands out of that game?
I think Ryan was put in a situation, and particularly in the fourth quarter, where, you know, you're talking about unfamiliar territory facing that Alabama offense, or defense rather. You know, quite frankly, Arkansas should have won that game, I mean, hands down. But nevertheless, I think Ryan performed very well in the first half. His performance kind of trickled down or leveled off just a little bit because, obviously, Nick Saban and his staff kind of, you know, changed their game plan, so to speak, defensively to kind of, you know, gear up for what Ryan was doing. And I don't think his stock has necessarily dropped. I think he has to have a big performance in the next couple of weeks in order for him to kind of stay, you know, plateau with, you know, rest of the quarterbacks, you know, i.e., you know, Luck. But nevertheless, I think he's status quo right now. Once again, he has to bounce back from last week. Those two picks in the fourth quarter were crucial, and it was detrimental to them winning last week. But nevertheless, I think he should bounce back, and I still think he's the top rated quarterback in the country right now.
All right, Justin, how about you? What did you take away from his performance last week?
I think it was good for him, to be honest with you, to see that as far as how Nick Saban made those adjustments in the second half, and for him to maybe struggle a little bit, because hopefully he'll go back and look at the tape and be able to make some adjustments, because he wasn't fundamentally sound in that second half. He made some bad decisions, and so hopefully he'll take what that, you know, as far as the disappointment in the second half to what he had, make some adjustments himself, and be able to come out and be a better quarterback as we go along through this college football season.
It'll be interesting to see if he does make adjustments and how he fares against the better defenses. Guys, the things that concerned me was even that first pick in the first half, it looked like he completely didn't know what defense it was. He thought it was man-to-man, thought he had a receiver streaking open in the back, didn't realize they were really playing zone, and he threw it right into the hands of the safety, forced a couple of deep balls there in the fourth quarter. And I think he got a little anxious there because before that interception, the one where he threw into double coverage when they were still winning, Alabama had two long drives sandwiching an Arkansas three and out. I think they ran like 22 plays to three, something like that. And I think he got a little trigger happy. I really think it was third down, and he didn't want to throw the ball out of bounds, even though they had the lead. And he's got to learn, hey, sometimes you got to trust the defense and live to play another day. Don't force that football. You're winning the football game. Trust your teammates. All right, let's move on to another quarterback. Tonight's game, Gerard Johnson of Texas A&M taking on Oklahoma State, a pair of undefeated clubs that aren't getting a lot of love. So far this season, Johnson's been kind of shaky, though. 865 yards, 7 touchdowns, but 4 interceptions, including 4 last week against Florida International when he was only 11 of 31 passing. Geez, wow, this is not the kid we saw play against Texas last year when they almost pulled off the upset. Justin, stock report on Gerard Johnson.
Well, I think it's inconsistent, like you reported. I mean, obviously, he came his first two games, he threw over 65% completion, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. This past week, 35% completion, 1 touchdown, 4 interceptions. So, I mean, I think he's got to come out tonight, you know, as far as against a strong Big 12 team and have a good performance to kind of put him back, you know, because when we talked about him earlier in the season, preseason, this guy could have been, a late first-round pick, you know, and a guy who could be a developmental prospect, you know, for the next level. He's still got to show that. He's got a lot of time to do that. Had a bad game. Got to bounce back tonight.
Definitely, yeah, an impressive talent, but, you know, very shaky start so far. What's your take, Kelron, stock report on Gerard Johnson?
I mean, first of all, I think his physical presence alone is going to be eye-opening, but he's very inconsistent just in terms of trusting what he sees and reading defenses. I think he's more so relying just on his athletic ability instead of, you know, going through his progression, standing in the pocket and showing NFL scouts and personnel people that, yeah, I can stand in the pocket. I do have the presence, you know, i.e. Tom Brady, to go downfield and to understand coverages, whether it's man, zone, brackets, and so on and so forth. He definitely has to bounce back tonight versus Oklahoma State and kind of get his mojo back, so to speak, and, you know, leading up to next week or the 9th versus Arkansas. Those are two big games that I think that are going to be on national television for him to kind of showcase a bounce back from his disappointing, you know, 4 games thus far.
Yeah, let's see how he does. If he has a good game, we may talk a little Mallett versus Johnson next week. But let's not forget my guy, the redshirt sophomore, Andrew Luck. Kelron, going to Outson Stadium, you've been there, you've played there. How do you think the young kid's going to fare? He's thrown for 912 yards already this season, 11 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions. How do you think he'll do in this tough road test? I'm assuming better than Locker did against Nebraska.
Yeah, a lot better probably. Austin Stadium is one of the tougher stadiums to play in throughout the country. You know, they pack in 50,000 people there, and they sit right on top of you. But, you know, Andrew, this is the first time, you know, this season that he's going to face the speed of what the Ducks have. I mean, we're talking about Terrell Turner coming off the edge and Kenny Rowe, you know, those two bookends coming off the edge. So this is his real first test, you know, versus NFL-type speed, so to speak, and a scheme that's going to be similar to what, you know, he's going to see in the NFL next year. But, you know, those sophomore running backs that he has and Awusa, the receiver, you know, they fare very well, you know, going into Saturday's game. But I don't, you know, just in terms of his stock, I mean, he's, you know, he's right behind Mallett, I think, just in terms of, you know, being drafted in next April's draft. You know, I love his presence. I love his pocket presence. I love his demeanor, in the game and whatnot. He's a tremendous talent. But once again, the speed that he's going to face, you know, tonight, you know, he probably won't face that again to UCLA and SC.
How about you, Justin? What's your take on Andrew Luck as he goes into his toughest test so far this season?
Well, yeah, I mean, he went to South Bend, you know, this past Saturday, and had an all right game. You know, caught his first couple interceptions, and he did okay. He led them to a win, and that's what he needs to do, and continue to do that, and continue to progress. You know, I want to see him stay in, for another year and get some more development, because I think he can be an excellent pro at the next level and be really a franchise quarterback. And I hope he stays in for, you know, another season there at Stanford and really kind of develops those skills, because he's got all the talent in the world. He just got to be more consistent and continue to do what he's doing.
All right, Justin, thanks a lot. We're going to let you go as we complete the roundtable here, but that's Justin Van Fulpen, our draft guru, and he's with us every week. Thanks a lot, Justin.
Yep, thanks. We'll talk to you later, guys.
All right, we're going to stick with Kelron here as we move on. And Kelron, before we get on to some of the games this weekend that we're going to discuss, talk a little bit about linebacker Akeem Ayers from UCLA. As I like to say, when you think of linebackers, think of Akeem Ayers. He's got 29 tackles, 5.5 tackles for a loss, 2 interceptions, 2 sacks, kind of a do-it-all kind of player. Reminds me a little bit of a guy named Mo Lewis who used to play in my stomping grounds here in New York, where he's kind of a jack-of-all-trades. What did you think of what he did last week, and is he somebody whose stock is on the rise?
Well, definitely. Right now he's probably, from an overall standpoint, the number 2 linebacker on the board, behind Greg Jones. But as far as outside backers, he's definitely, the number 1 guy on the board. He's a phenomenal talent, great athlete. I mean, he's the type of guy at 250 pounds that can play in the open field, in open space. And, that's a rarity with that combination of speed and size and able to drop back in coverage, also come off the edge and be productive versus the run. His stock is definitely rising. I mean, we're talking potentially right now I would say he's definitely a top 15 pick, but pretty soon we're probably talking about a top 10, maybe a top 5 pick, depending on some of these NFL teams do. But he's such a rangy guy that can, like you said, a jack of all trades that can do it all. And it would really shock me. I mean, really, really shock me if he decides to come back, because I don't think, what he's doing now, he can possibly, bypass that opportunity to play in the NFL coming up April.
All right, Georgia at Colorado. A.J. Green is back. Finally, we're going to get to see him play this year. How do you think he's going to fare head-to-head game 1 against Jimmy Smith, one of the top corners in the country for Colorado?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think Jimmy's going to, that's going to be an interesting matchup just in terms of how A.J. Green is going to fare this week. Obviously, he hasn't played because of the suspension that, he's been going through there in Georgia. But nevertheless, he should come out hungry. And it's going to be interesting to see, Colorado decides to bracket, A.J., or are they going to leave Jimmy on the island in terms of playing man coverage and let's showcase that matchup there. So it's going to be interesting to see. I would love to touch base with my brother on that one, since he's a DFO at CU, and kind of pick his brain and see what's going on with the game plan. But I don't think that would be right. But nevertheless, like I said, that's going to be an intriguing matchup. I think Jimmy's going to come out and try to lock him up man-to-man coverage. We're talking about 2 teams right now that, quite frankly, both head coaches are on the hot seat. So this game is crucial to both programs there.
And one more head-to-head matchup in that game also might be played on an island, not in the perimeter, closer to the middle of the field, and that's that left tackle against the pass rusher, Nate Solder for Colorado against Justin Houston, Georgia's top pass rusher.
Yeah, Justin's a guy who's definitely moving up on the board. He's a physical pass rusher his presence alone, just in terms of his pass rushing ability, is phenomenal. Nate Solder's a tall, rangy tackle, being 6'9", over 300 pounds. He's very athletic. The former tight end who's moved to tackle, he's definitely first rounder right now. Kind of struggled, throughout the Cal game, just in terms of his pass rushing ability, stopping the pass rush, so to speak, and kind of been struggling, bending the knees in his way, so to speak, in the run game. But nevertheless, Justin, that Nate matchup is going to be extremely one to watch. Two guys that are talking about NFL potential and NFL talent, is going to be fun to watch that Saturday.
Yeah, Houston's been a little up and down, but out of all the Georgia players, he has seemed to fit in the best in that new 3-4 scheme that they've been running a lot. Obviously, they kind of alternate back and forth, but he seems to be a good fit as that hybrid kind of guy, defensive end / outside linebacker. Arizona State against your boys, Oregon State. Talk to me a little bit about James Rogers. We're not sure if he's going to play or not. Has a concussion issue. How about Jacquizz Rodgers? He's had a little tough go of it so far this year.
Yeah, it's been a tough go. I mean, you're talking about a tough loss versus a TCU team who's top 10 team in the country, as well as a Boise, which is a top 5 team in the country, and it's just been a rough start. We're typically at Oregon State from a historical standpoint. This is where they start to pick up their speed or their mojo, so to speak, fifth week of the season, that's when they start to really get productive. And in terms of with the quiz, I think he should have a productive game. This is a must-win situation for Oregon State. I mean, a must-win. They have to win this game. You know, we're talking about a schedule that consists of Arizona at Washington and Cal and UCLA, so there's going to be some tough games. But if James doesn't play, it's going to hurt us a little bit just in terms of the dual threat that he possesses in terms of his special teams play and his receiver play. So we'll see. Arizona State presents a good matchup. I mean, they have, you know, Vontaze Burfict and Lawrence Guy down there who's, you know, two NFL guys themselves. But once again, I think this is a must-win situation for Oregon State, you know, coming into Corvallis this weekend. And I think the Beavers get it done with Jacquez, you know, having a huge game.
All right, Cal Ron, thanks a lot for joining us. I'll give a go Beavers for you. And you're right, this is usually when Coach Riley gets his club going. It'll be interesting to see how Arizona State does. You know, they played well against Wisconsin, fell short, played well against Oregon, fell short. You know, I wonder how much they got left in them. They surprised me how they've played so far. Sometimes, though, these teams, when they suffer those back-to-back heartbreaking-type losses, it's hard to come back for that third week, and Oregon State knows this is kind of a must-win game at home. Kelron, thanks a lot. Our Super Scout, Kelron Sykes, we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, thanks.
All right, we're going to keep it moving here with the show, and up next is our man Wes O'Donnell from College Football Insiders. He writes the game of the week every week, each and every week, so go to NFLDriveBible.com, become an all-access football member, and get on the list. Get that College Football Insiders this week. That's Oregon against Stanford. Yes, Oregon against Stanford. I did get it right. But before we get to that, Wes was on location last week to see North Carolina take on the Rutgers Scarlet Knight in New Jersey, and the Tar Heels came up big, got their first win. Now, was not rubbing it in by playing the winning fight song there for North Carolina, Wes, but thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Wes, you know, North Carolina obviously missing a lot of guys on defense. I talked about this at the top of the show. The way the ACC has shaken out, I really would have loved to have seen this team full strength. I think they easily could be 3-0. You know, the big question mark was the quarterback. The kid is actually having a decent season. But the guys that did play, Bruce Carter, Quan Sturdivant, Quinton Copels filling in for Quinn at defensive end there as the main guy, the number one guy, they did show up last week, and they played very well. Talk about those guys a little bit defensively. And you know, just to throw it out there, you did the player spotlight on Bruce Carter, which was featured in the newsletter.
Yeah, as you said, had these players been there, it would have been something special to watch at the end of the season. But they went into Rutgers, and they actually got a pretty good fight from the Scarlet Knights. And Rutgers kind of gave away a lot of things here, but Copels himself ended up with 3 sacks on the game. He was in the backfield for a majority of the time, pretty much holding hands with Savage, the Rutgers quarterback. And Sturdivant was, every single play was flying across the field. Rutgers actually ran a lot of wildcat with Muhammad Sanu, their sophomore do-it-all receiver. And every single time he went up the middle, Sturdivant was there to plug the hole. But he ended up leaving the game, I think it was the late third quarter, with what appeared to be a hamstring injury, and he still led the game with 12 total tackles. But Carter was the one who made the most impact for us, or for them. He ended up with 7 tackles, a big interception in the first half. He dropped into coverage, made a great read on Savage, and took 55 yards back to get UNC on the board for the first time in the game after being down 10-0. And then late in the game, he ended up with a blocked punt, which turned out to be his 7th of his career. And they ended up getting another field goal out of that and pushed the lead away from Rutgers, which Rutgers couldn't come back from.
It, you know, Wes, the first thing that pops out to me when you look at the stat sheet from this book is Muhammad Sanu, 15 carries, 9 receptions. Did they bring anybody else on offense with them?
It appeared not. Even when Savage dropped back to throw, he was throwing at Sanu. And a lot of the time, Savage would get into a little bit of groove. He completed a couple of balls, stepped up in the pocket, made a throw. And then questionable decision-making by Shiano, he'd pull him and go back to the Wildcat. And at one point ended up putting in freshman Chase Dodd there for a while. And apparently it came out later that Savage has some bruised ribs from the game, and he might have been getting treated at the time. But they just never let him get into a rhythm, and everything they wanted to do was pretty much geared towards new at all the whole time.
Yeah, that's something that my brother Chris, who's our Big East guy, and he's got his Big East power rankings and preview up on the website, NFL Draft Bible website right now. But that's something he brought up to me, is he's wondering, is does this in and out with the Wildcat, is the true sophomore Savage having some trouble? Wes, what do you think? Do you think that's part of the problem? Is it just a sophomore slump? I mean, the numbers so far, 370 yards, 52% completion percentage, one touchdown to three interceptions, but two of them last week. The numbers aren't pretty so far for the true sophomore Tom Savage.
Yeah, I mean, at now that was their third game for Rutgers. They you have to start thinking slump with that. I don't know, you know, what Chiano's necessarily seeing in practice that's gearing them to go more Wildcat. I don't think going against UNC's defense with Bruce Carter and Quan Sturdivant at linebacker is the most intelligent move for them to go with there, especially if they're not going to throw the ball out of the formation. So Savage's confidence definitely has to be shaken right now, throw on this rib injury, and it could be a little bit of trouble. And then the next thing you know, we could see, you know, more Wildcat, or we could see this kid, Chase Dodd, come in, and then who knows what's going to happen from there.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked a lot of what I saw from Savage last year, particularly the way he finished the season. You know, big kid, strong arm. To me, looks like he could be a future pro. Something to watch to see how his season develops. Now, let's go to the game of the week, Stanford at Oregon, and another sophomore quarterback trying to make a name for himself, Andrew Luck. And, you know, one of the intriguing things in this game, Wes, to me, is the stylistic differences. You know, you talk about the pure speed, the explosive spread attack of Oregon, and then on the other side, Stanford, the more traditional pro-style offense, fullback, tight end, physical football. Even though Toby Gerhardt's not there, they're still a physical team with a strong offensive line. Talk about those two offenses and the stylistic differences.
You guys talked about Luck a decent amount earlier. He's the focal point for that offense, but they are very balanced in what they do. They're throwing for about 235 a game and rushing for about 225 a game. They're going to pound you for a while, and then, you know, throw the play action at you. And Luck, when he's on target, is as good as there can be in the nation. And Oregon, on the other hand, you know, they can score on any given play from anywhere on the field. They average more points than anybody else in the nation right now at about 58 a game. Stanford's pretty close at 48. But, you know, Stanford leads the nation, or leads the Pac-10 in time of possession, whereas Oregon, as I said, just is a blitzkrieg of scoring points. They have five guys over 100 yards rushing already this year, including, you know, sophomore Michael James, and they get Barner back. I think he's supposed to be at full strength this week. So that's going to be really interesting. The team speed of Oregon is going to be a tough matchup for that Stanford defense.
Yeah, and they just have a ridiculous amount of explosive plays over 20 yards on the season, and they spread it out. Well, Michael James might be one of the most exciting players in the country from his running back position. But, you know, all we talk about, all we hear about in this game is offense, offense, offense. But, Wes, when you did your preview, when I read your preview, you pointed out that, hey, both of these defense so far have been playing pretty well. So which defense do you think will step up in this game and maybe end up winning the game?
Yeah, really well, actually. You know, Oregon's only given up an average of 11 points a game so far, and Stanford's 13.8. So they both do it on the defensive side of the ball as well. Oregon's forced 9 interceptions already this year, and nine fumble recoveries as well. So they got 11 sacks. So they like to get after the quarterback and force turnovers. And there's not just one guy for Oregon, especially. They've got 7 different guys with an interception, 8 different guys with a sack. So they do it from all over the field, from all different positions. And they get after you. And Stanford, as you guys talked about earlier in the Daniel Thomas interview, you got Maristetch in there playing both sides. They like to get after the quarterback. They have 14 sacks already this year as well. And they've only given up an average of 3.2 yards a carry so far this season. So that's going to be something to definitely watch. I think the biggest thing is going to be which one of those teams comes up with the big turnovers, which one of those offenses is going to be able to protect the ball, because that's what it's going to come down to. These teams are going to score points. I think they put up 93 combined last season on each other. I think close to 1,000 yards, maybe over. And I'm sure we can expect the same this year. But both these defenses are probably the reason why these teams are rated so high right now as well.
All right, and before we let you go, Wes, one more big game, Oklahoma versus Texas. And, I mean, it's just strange being that this is kind of not, you know, not only isn't the marquee game, it's probably the third game of the week when you factor in Florida-Alabama. Red River rivalry usually, you know, is the prominent game each and every year, basically besides the Big 12 South for the last 11, 12 years. If you recall, the last time one of these teams didn't win it was when A&M did it. And Sir Parker led the Aggies to a big upset over Kansas State when they were looking to be a BCS championship contending team. Looking at this week, you know, last week's game, UCLA with that pistol attack similar to Nevada's, that's where they got it from, really ran the ball well against Texas. Do you think DeMarco Murray is licking his lips going into this week? Murray's got 436 yards and 7 touchdowns for the Sooners.
Yeah, and he also does incredible things out of the backfield for that team. He can line up in the slot, do a lot of things with the explosive ability that he has. But this is still Texas is still the number two defense in the nation, despite giving up the 264 last week to UCLA. I mean, UCLA only threw the ball for 27 yards. It obviously worked, but Texas is still, you know, they're still going to come at you defensively. They still have a very, very good rush defense. I mean, I would expect to see Oklahoma go back and look at this tape and go, oh, wow, how did they do this? But led by Sam Chews, an All-American over there for Texas, I expect him to come back pretty angry in this game. I do think Murray's going to get some stuff done. He probably will find the end zone. But he may have to do it from outside, splitting outside a little bit as well, because Texas, they're not going to take 2 weeks of a beating like that.
Now, of course, the Sooners have a far more balanced attack than UCLA does. They're not going to throw for double digits in the air in terms of yards, and that's because of Landry Jones and maybe even more specifically Ryan Broyles. Jones has already thrown for over 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns on the season to 3 picks, and Ryan Broyles, 41 receptions for 482 yards, averaging over 10 catches per game. But this is going to be by far the toughest secondary they're going to go up against. You got the two Browns, you got Aaron Williams at corner, Gideon at safety. Talk about that matchup, OU's passing attack, Jones to Broyles against that stellar UT defensive backfield, maybe the best secondary in the country.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I would think they are the best secondary in the country. Three of those guys are on the Thorpe Award watch list. Probably all going pretty high in the draft. Broyles is an interesting guy, though. I definitely think he's been the most productive of those top junior class receivers this year, and that's a pretty loaded junior class of receivers with Green, who hasn't played yet, and Julio Jones and Baldwin and Michael Floyd and Notre Dame. Broyles is just blowing them out of the water. Anyone who winds up in front of him hasn't been able to do it. He's recorded 7 straight 100-yard games dating back to last season, and this was his 11th straight game with 7 catches. So he's done it every week for about dating back to last season now, and no one's been able to stop him. It was actually funny. He was interviewed this week, and he said he doesn't even know the names of the Texas DBs, doesn't know anything about them, and just looks forward to lining up against guys who are apparently going to be playing on Sundays. So he's definitely a guy to watch, and it's going to be a fun matchup.
Maybe we should send him the NFL Draft Bible 2011 prospectus so he can learn a little bit about the Texas defenders, because we did write a lot about those guys. How about the other way? When Oklahoma's on defense, Texas has the ball. Texas still looking to find who is their feature back. Do they have a feature back? What kind of running game do they have? Garrett Gilbert, thrown for 885 yards, but 4 interceptions to 4 touchdowns. That's not going to cut it against Oklahoma.
Yeah, they got to find some sort of identity offensively. They have yet to see a running back on their team go for over 80 yards by himself. They really aren't getting it done anywhere. Gilbert, a lot of things he's done well have been underneath. He completed 9 of 9 to start the game against UCLA last week, and then his first incompletion was to a wide-open James Kuykendall in the back of the end zone, and he completely missed him. And, I don't know what it is about him. You know, we expected some things from him this year, and we know Texas wanted to get back to a dominant running style, but they just haven't found it. They've tried 3 different guys at starting running back. And aside from the Air Force game, where Oklahoma gave up over 350 yards rushing, they're not a bad rushing defense, but they've given up a lot, an average of 177 and an average of 240 in the air. They've given up a lot of yards, and they've actually given up a decent amount of points. A lot of their games are a lot closer than that.
All right, Wes, thanks a lot. We have to let you go. The show is winding down. Don't forget, check us out next week, same time, same channel, 5 o'clock Thursday as we set you up for week 6. Go to NFLDraftBible.com to become an all-access football member, and we're going to let you go with a little Boomer Sooner.